Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hey, very good Friday to you. You made it all the way to Friday. Now you want to man up and finish strong. Let's go into the weekend and do it the right way. Nice to be here. Got a lot of show for you on this Friday, starting with a telephone number, 1-800-636-8686. Remember, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've got three interviews on a busy Friday. Coming up later on this hour, Brad Keselowski, the 2012 NASCAR Series Cup champ. He'll be by in about 35 minutes. Top of hour number two, Jim Trotter, an NFL Network reporter. And in hour three, the WBO featherweight champion, Shakur Stevenson. On top of that, I've got Alvin's week that was. I've got the ATP. I've got another player profile. I want to reset the Jim Rome podcast this week. Lots to get to. And now we're 2 weeks out from the Smack Off. So you want to get in, get yourself qualified for it. 1-800-636-8686. You know you can follow me on Twitter, always, at Jim Rome. We read your tweets on the air. Really good tweets get read. Exceptional tweets get retweeted. And you can email me, as you know, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. And that is how Friday sets up. For the right telephone call, I'd even bust open the format. Remember, you got to get through Adam Hawk to get to me, to get on the air. Make sure you know what you want to tell him when he says, what's your take? What's on your mind? All right, let me start with the NFL. Last night, a group of NFL stars, including Patrick Mahomes, Saquon Barkley, Michael Thomas, Tyrann Mathieu, Deshaun Watson, Jarvis Landry, and Odell Beckham Jr., released a powerful video addressing the league itself. Roll it.
It's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered.
How many times do we need to ask you to listen to your players?
What will it take
for one of us to be murdered by police brutality?
What if I was George Floyd?
If I was George Floyd?
What if I was George Floyd?
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 I am George Floyd.
I am Breonna Taylor.
I am Ahmaud Arbery.
I am Eric Garner.
I am Laquan McDonald.
I am Tamir Rice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Walter Scott.
I am Michael Brown Jr.
I am Samuel Du Bois.
I am Frank Smart.
I'm Philip White.
I am Jordan Baker.
We will not be silenced.
We assert our right
to peacefully protest.
It shouldn't take this long to admit.
So, on behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
We, the National Football League,
admit wrong and silencing our players from peacefully protesting.
We, the National Football League,
believe black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
And upon hearing that is, oh no, Rome, really? Again? I'm out of here. My response to that would be, okay, I understand. See you on Monday. Or maybe I won't see you again. But again, we're going to start the program, and this is going to be the topic. At the end, they call on the league to state the following, quote, "We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systemic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit wrong in silencing our players from peacefully protesting. We, the National Football League, believe black lives matter." Quote, end of quote. It's really powerful in its simplicity and in holding the league accountable, especially for silencing players who did peacefully protest. And that's not just about Colin Kaepernick. It's also about the players who were told to stay in the locker room or the tunnel instead of peacefully demonstrating on the sideline. A simple, powerful video with a very clear message. If teams and the league want to release statements, here then is the statement we want you to release. Don't just give it the usual cliche-riddled statement about racism being bad. Be clear and unambiguous about where you stand. And if you thought that a straightforward message like that would get a universally positive response on Twitter, then you don't know Twitter and you don't know people. Because all you have to do is check the replies to any of the players who tweeted that video and you're hit with a wave of, yeah, buts and whatabouts. And if you want another voice on this, let's check in on Martellus Bennett. Because in the wake of the comments from Drew Brees, Bennett got on Twitter and he let it rip. He went with a Twitter thread that was so long and so incredible. I don't have time to read the entire thing right here on the air, but he covers racism in the league, coaching, hiring practices, sports media, and the fact that white quarterbacks have said and done nothing on injustice for way too long. I can't read the whole thing, but here are a few highlights. Quote, "Damn, y'all thought Drew would say something different than what he did?" And they followed that up by three crying, laughing emojis. Quote, "Tell me one white quarterback that truly stands for something other than their Captain America images." Quote, "Not one of them spoke up when it wasn't easy to speak up. Now they're writing statements." Quote, "And y'all want to applaud them for these statements when y'all crucified every athlete that said something by protesting in the beginning. Locking arms was always stupid. There was no risk in locking arms. It was no different from these corporate BLM statement." End quote. He's right. It's true. The comments from Breeze this week were not that much different from what he had said 4 years earlier. And they weren't much different from what other white players said 4 years earlier. At that time, star white players standing up and speaking out in support of Kaepernick and others would have made a huge difference. But that didn't happen. Bennett goes on, and I quote, "Look, I'm happy that they're saying something, but when they had a chance to make a big play for their black teammates and colleagues, most of them remained silent, showed ignorance, or didn't say anything of importance when it was really needed." Bennett goes on, and I quote, "Funny thing is that if the white guys I showered with, slept next to, bleeped next to, counted on, etc., etc., would never speak up for me, how could I ever expect the white folks that I've never spent any time with at all to do so?" End of quote. That's another heavy truth. The league and the players talk about how team is family. They always talk about that. How everybody puts on pads and a uniform is a brother. But as Bennett lays out, where were his brothers on this? The guys that he played with, sweat with, worked with, lived with, bleeped with. Where were they on this one? And then he closes out the thread with two more extremely powerful tweets. Quote, "Let's not be ignorant. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew talking about protesting the military when taking a knee. It's been forever long. How the bleep do you still not know what your black brothers, quote, are fighting for? You get in front of millions on your platform and you give an ignorant statement bleeping up the message dudes have lost their jobs fighting for. You and your friends need to take your knees off of the necks of your black teammates and stand for something." End of quote. It's an extremely, extremely strong statement. And I think perfectly said. As we talked about yesterday, it has been 4 years since Colin Kaepernick started that protest. It's been 4 years since everybody knew what the protest was about. So how did Drew Brees not know that? If you're in a locker room every single day, and you're spending time every single day with your teammates, how do you not know that? How could you ignore that and still go with something about the military and the flag? It's not about that. It was never about that. And how do you not know that 4 years later? To do that would be just ignorant and venturing into willfully ignorant. And it's not just Breeze. It's for a lot of other players as well. If you pledge to care about the game and the players who play it, then listen to the issues and understand what's being said. Listen, take it all in, and see what you can do to change things. Don't say, yeah, but, or what about, and then come with some idiotic stat or dopey argument about crime in certain cities. That's not the issue at hand. And even if it were, be honest. You don't really care about the crime in that city anyway. And if your beef is with the phrase, Black Lives Matter, you haven't done enough to understand the message. And as has been said countless times before, when somebody raises money for cancer research, you don't run up on that person and scream, what about the other diseases? And challenge yourself on this one. Be better. Do better. Grow. That's what I'm trying to do. We should all be trying to do that. Either that or just come out and admit that you really don't care about the athletes as people and you just want them to be robots who play for your entertainment. 1-800-636-8686. Look, I understand that this topic is wearing some of you down, but it's not going anywhere and it shouldn't. There's a reason we are talking about these issues. We need to. All right, as I've done every single day this week, I'm starting the show with that. Because the main thing is the main thing. That's still the most important thing, the biggest topic. But I'm not giving you 3 hours exclusively on that. I do have some other thoughts, including the NBA and the return of the NBA and what's going to happen to these players that go months between playing actual games. Will anybody show up the way Sean Kemp did back in 99, coming out the lockout? I doubt it, but we can hope. I've got thoughts on that. Of course, coming up later on, I've got a player profile today for the Smack Off. The Smack Off is 2 weeks from today. The player profile today is Gino in San Antonio. Never know whether or not he's going to show up for the Smack Off, but he's worthy of getting the treatment. Jake Fromm is not off to a good start as a Buffalo Bill. I have that story for you, too. And I've got Alvin's Week That Was, and I've got an ATP. And I want to reset episode 132 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Jimmy Connors and his son, Brett. Not too late to come in here and try to qualify for a golden ticket. Remember, the Smack Off is 2 weeks from today. The winner gets $5,000. $5,000. Checking some reaction before I go to break. Mike in LFK tweets, great video from the players, Rome. Will the owners finally listen? I really hope so. I'd like to hear expect instead of like to hear, though. We have two ears and one mouth. We need to listen and shut the hell up. Sean Rohasic tweets, how much longer until Smack Off 26? It's 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
It is 2 weeks. For a long time, it seemed like we had a long time. Not anymore. Now we're 2 weeks out. So keep that in mind. And if you're not going to be on the show, make sure you set it up so on June 19th, you have a place to listen to or watch the show. It's one of a kind. We only do it once a year. This is the 26th time. All right, with that in mind, phone lines are open, 1-800-636-8686. I've got Brad Keselowski coming up at 40 past. Jim Trotter, top of hour two. Shakur Stevenson, WBO featherweight champ. Also, I want to talk some UFC. Good fight card coming up this weekend that I can get into. When your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop. Do not take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or your truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Or when you need auto parts quickly, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com, O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It's Friday. Yesterday was Thursday. Tomorrow is Saturday. Because it's Friday, that means it's an Ask the Pros Day. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/AskThePros. Submit a question there. Listen later on. I might answer yours. And you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Today's Did I Friday. Not say? Thank you. Tomorrow's Saturday. Then it's Sunday.
Today's Friday.
Then we start over again, and it's Monday. And they're letting some of the coaches back into the facility. And then the players can come in. And then we can teach football. It's going to be great. Did I or did I not say that the best tweets get read on the air? Did I or did I not say that exceptional tweets get read on the air and retweeted? This guy understands. He's going to get both. The good brother is in. Carl Anderson.
Brother.
I'm going to read this exactly how he wrote this. Hashtag. Good brother Romy. Hashtag at Jim Rome. Hashtag spitting fire today in the hashtag jungle, hashtag baby cash, watching intensely. Always happy to sit and relax and watch, hashtag Van Smack. Big announcement July 18th, Jim. Can't wait to come in the hashtag jungle and talk about it. Nice to see at I'm Adam Hawk at work and not golfing out. Right? About time, Hawk. The good brother, Carl Anderson's right. Shout out to you, good brother. Shout out to the good son, Cash. Shout out to all of your good sons. All right, so the good brother's got a major announcement to make on July 18th. Can't wait to hear it. Appreciate you watching the program, big dog. Oh, and don't forget about the good father, the good brother, the good father, the good son. It's all good. Carl, my brother, you're good, is what I'm trying to say. All right, so you have your telephone number. Let me switch up on you right now. The NBA has voted on a plan to return in July with 22 teams that will lead to a 16-team postseason, and then a champion will be crowned potentially as late as October. However, they have got that format, they've got their plan, but there's still a lot of what-ifs. Like, what if a player tests positive? What if a number of players test positive? What if there's a second wave of COVID-19? What if players don't show up in shape? What if we have a Sean Kemp 2.0? This very topic came up yesterday when I had Chris Mannix on the show.
Oh, I mean, like, our hopes are dashed. It has to be. And there are two things about Sean Kemp at that point. First is, like, he was listed as going up 35 pounds. There are people in that organization that will swear was almost double that. Like, they will swear that he was rolling in about 315 at that point. And Wayne Embry was the GM at that time, and Wayne Embry had said, like, he went to Sean and was like, Sean, you know, what the hell happened? Like, what are you doing here weighing this much? And Kemp had said, look, I kind of rolled the dice and assumed we weren't coming back this year. And I was wrong, so here I am. So if you're the Cavaliers and you made a big trade a year earlier to get that guy, I mean, you had to think that, you know, this is the kind of, you know, kind of physical setback that could turn your franchise upside down.
Wayne Embry said, quote, Sean, what the hell happened? I can tell you what happened. He opened his mouth and began to jam copious amounts of grub into it and never stopped. I mean, there's definitely a question about what kind of shape guys will be in when they return and the risk in particular of soft tissue injuries when you go 4.5 months between regular season games. That said, that risk we know about, there's no way that we can have a Sean Kemp 2.0, right? There's no way a guy comes back the way Kemp came back from that lockout, right? I mean, that's impossible because the Rain Man did the impossible. And it's something I think does not get nearly the respect that it deserves. If you're too young to remember Sean Kemp in his prime, this is what it was like. This is the kind of brutality that he would unleash on opposing players. Just ask poor Alton Lister.
Turns and wheels it to Gary. Here the Sonics have a chance to take the lead again. First left side. Works on Hardaway into the baseline. Slapped away from behind. Rickley goes back to get it. Fires it cross court. Kemp's got it right up into the alley.
Into Lister's face. And understand, it looks way worse than it sounds. This guy was a beast. He was unbelievable. Dunk on Lister's head, knock him to the ground, and then point at him with both fingers. And it wasn't just Alton Lister. He also did Dennis Rodman like that.
Seattle has led by as many as 23, so the Bulls in the midst of their second run.
Not do justice to what this guy did. He spins baseline with this unbelievable move and then throws down a reverse dunk and then sits on Rodman's shoulders while hanging from the rim for like 5 minutes. The guy was incredible. He was listed at 6'10", 230. He was a six-time All-Star. He was a double-double machine. And then came the trade to Cleveland. Then came the lockout in 1998. And even though players weren't locked out of the gyms the way they have been during the pandemic, Kemp certainly locked himself out of the gyms and the cardio room, and he locked himself in the kitchen. Because the guy who used to be the most amazing elite specimen physically came back from the lockout looking like a beached whale. He went from putting up 21-12 in his final game of the 98 playoffs to allegedly weighing more than 312 when he came back. Remember, they had him listed at 230, and he came back allegedly at 315. He left the Rain Man. He returned as the Michelin Man. Check out this opening from an article in the Cleveland Plain Dealer from 2011. I'm reading this from the newspaper. Quote, the 98-99 NBA lockout weighed heavily on everyone involved, some more than others, few more than Sean Kemp. This article goes on, quote, just ask his former Cavaliers teammates who returned for an abbreviated 50-game season and were astonished at the transformation of Kemp's once sculpted frame. It was as if their all-star power forward hadn't picked up a basketball or put down a fork since the work stoppage began. End quote. Like, is that an article in a newspaper or a smack-off call? I'd have to run somebody for that level of personal appearance smack. Except in this case, it's all fair. So how does something like that happen? How does something like that happen? It's pretty easy, really. As Kemp told Mike Fratello, I didn't think we were coming back. What, Sean? Like, ever? Like, you were never going to play basketball ever again? Like, you never thought the game of basketball would ever start up again? So you just started eating and you never stopped? I mean, surely you realized that you would play again at some point. There would be basketball at some point. You knew that, right? Apparently not. So the team did Kemp a favor and listed him at 6'10", 280, which was still 34 pounds heavier than he weighed the previous year. 34. But again, GM Wayne Embry later revealed that Kemp showed up at 315. 3 freaking 15. The team admitted he put on 34 pounds, but that was only half of it. Literally. It's more like he put on 70 or more in 9 months. That is freaking prolific. That is so impressive. He went from a power forward to a left tackle. When he came back, 40 wasn't his jersey number. It was his BMI. He went from being a double-double machine to being a double-double machine. Hell! So I'm going to be really interested to see what kind of shape that NBA players are in next month. Because there is no way somebody goes Sean Kemp. No way. It's impossible. Sean Kemp coming back from that lockout at 315 is like Cy Young going 5'11". 511 wins. It's a record that will never be broken. And yes, I am well aware that Bryant Reeves put on 40 pounds during that same lockout. But think about that for a minute. Reeves put on 40 in that lockout, and Kemp nearly doubled him up. Nearly lapped him. Nearly lap-banded him. And besides, that dude's nickname was Big Country. If anybody should have been packing him on, it was Big Country, Bryant Reeves. Except Kemp, he went secretariat on him at the buffet. If a pro athlete puts on 70 pounds in 9 months, you have no choice but to tip your hat and to respect it. The Rain Man became the Grain Man, the Quiche Lorraine Man, the Did Not Train Man, the Gonna Need a Crane Man. Tell you what, he wasn't. He definitely was not the Romaine Man. Again, do you have any idea how hard you have to work to put on 70 pounds in 9 months? Let me help you with the math. That's 8 pounds a month. That's 2 pounds every single week. No weeks off. No weeks off. Every meal is a cheat meal. No days. If you have a week where you only put on 1 pound, you have to triple it the next week. That's a lot of pressure. 70 pounds in 9 months means absolutely no vegetables, no salads within 50 feet for 9 months. What I'm saying is it means you're Garrett Ritt.
Game on.
Game on, Ritt. Admit it, Ritt, you haven't run into a vegetable in 20 years or a piece of fruit. You're walking around here like you're Jack LaLanne if you have a banana, Ritt. Come on, man. finally. That's an H.
Mark it down.
Mark it down. That's an H. Mark it down. That's a Rice Krispie brick, Rit.
Mark it down.
R-I-C.
Mark it down.
Embry wrote that the team tried to do something about it. He said, quote, the Cleveland Clinic nutritionist put him on a diet, but Sean did not have the discipline to adhere to it. We even offered to have a chef go to his house and prepare meals for him. I told Sean, I don't want anyone playing for me that weighs more than me. That did not work either, end quote. And Wayne Embry was a large fellow. Nothing but respect. You come back at 315, you stay at 315. You worked hard to get that physique. Do not let them give you a dietitian or a chef to undo all the work you've done. You keep pounding the rock and you keep pounding food and not in that order. And the most amazing thing is, not that he gained 70 pounds in 9 months, but that he gained 70 pounds and still averaged more than 20 a game that year. 20 points. Yeah, and probably 20 burgers. 20 of anything he sees. And as much as you would like to see it, nobody's going to show up in Orlando this time around looking like Sean Kemp. Kemp was one of one. As much as I would love to see that happen, it's just not going to. No one anywhere, in sports or out, is going to emerge from the lockdown the way Kemp emerged from the lockout. You slap that on a piece of wood, shellac it, put it up on a wall, because that lockout 70 is never, ever coming down. You might be a COVID-15, a COVID-20, maybe a COVID-25, but that lockout 70 is never, ever coming down. I mean, sure, records are made to be broken, but not that one. Not that one. My point is, he never, ever received the respect and credit that he deserved for packing on 70 as a professional athlete during a lockout. Today is the day he gets that credit. I salute you, Sean. 70. When we come back, phone lines are open. First up, though, a conversation with Brad Keselowski, 2012 NASCAR Series Cup champ. My guy Jim Trotter, top of the hour. Shakur Stevenson in hour number three. Alvy's going to let it rip in hour number three. But the week that was, a player profile for the Smackoff is coming up. It's Gino in San Antonio. Somebody let Gino know he's getting some run today, because I need to see him in 2 weeks. Time now for a sports update. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We are efforting Brad Keselowski. And I know we will find him because he represents NASCAR, and they always come through. So that's scheduled for this segment. In the meantime, some reaction. Wells in the 360. He can speak to this. Of course, Sean Kemp gained weight. He was leaving Seattle and going to Cleveland. Who wouldn't be sad and eat their feelings? Again, did you listen to the take? Wells, that's not why he did that. He did it because he thought they were not coming back. As Chris Mannix said yesterday, he rolled the dice that they would not be coming back. And as I said yesterday, he rolled the dice and he crapped out.
What the hell happened? Like, what are you doing here?
What the hell happened?
Kevin said, look,
like, oh my God, Rain Man, what the hell happened? I'll tell you what happened. He opened up his mouth and started shoveling enormous amounts of food into it and didn't stop. For almost a year. SA Sports Honk tweets, Rome, we remember Sean Kemp in his prime. Sincerely, child support. I'm saying if you remember this guy as a player, he was unbelievable. An incredible physical specimen. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. I do want your telephone calls. As promised, though, right now we are joined by the driver of the number two Auto Trader Ford Mustang for Team Penske, the 2012 NASCAR Cup Series champ, 2010 NASCAR Xfinity Series champ, qualified for the playoffs 8 times, including 6 straight seasons, the winner of 2 of the last 3 races. NASCAR Cup Series returns to action Sunday at Atlanta Motor Speedway with the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. It's 3 p.m. Eastern. It is on Fox. Brad Keselowski is my guest. Brad, it's good to have you back. Let me first ask you, before we get into this amazing run that you and your team are on right now, how is everybody around you doing during this very unusual time, Brad?
Oh, well, thank you for caring, Jim. I appreciate that. We're doing great. My family, my wife, daughters, and everybody else is doing really well. We're very, very fortunate, and our hearts go out to those who are not as fortunate. We're thinking about you if you're listening.
I echo those sentiments. Well said. So, Brad, you won Sunday at Bristol in a race where you'd been running really fast all day long, even when you were not leading. Overall, how were you and the team feeling about that car throughout the day?
Yeah, it's quite an up-and-down day. You know, the NASCAR races are so long, Jim, that, you know, you start with, or at least we did at Bristol, we started having a great day. In the middle of the race, it kind of fell apart. Then right at the very end, it went our way, and we were able to win. But such a roller coaster ride of emotions. You know, you work on your car, you work on your techniques, but everything is so dynamic. You know, it's what it takes to be fast at the start of the race versus what it takes to be fast at the end of the race is not always the same. It's kind of like a football game where the defense adjusts and now the same plays aren't working, the same formations aren't working. That's a lot of how NASCAR is. And so to be good over a 500 lap or a 500 mile race is really, really tough. And fortunately, we were able to get the right adjustments in at the very end of the race to overcome all that and bring home the win, but sure wasn't easy.
Brad Keselowski is joining us. All right, you mentioned the end of the race. Let me ask you about that, because you get to the final 10 laps, and you've got all three of the late race leaders, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, and Chase Elliott. They all crash out. What was going through your mind as that played out?
Yeah, well, I mean, Merry Christmas was probably the first thing that came through my mind. You know, I think that speaks to how dynamic the track was. I think Denny Hamlin probably had the race won, and the groove kind of moved on him, and he just missed it by a little bit as it came down. And it's kind of like the out-of-bounds line moved in a foot or two, and he stepped over and got loose and got into the wall, like you said. And then next up was Chase Elliott, and he made a slip up in another corner, and my teammate Joey Logano got underneath him, and he slipped up on the next corner, and we were there to strike, and as those two were kind of rubbing fenders, our car was dialed in and able to make the pass. So, you know, it's so easy, especially with the formats we have, Jim. No practice, no qualifying, no chance to really dial yourself in as a driver, but also dial the car and the team in before the race, and it makes it very easy to make a mistake.
Brad Keselowski is my guest. At the same time, Brad, you and the team are running so well right now. That's your second win in three races. A week earlier in the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte, Elliott went into the pits. You gambled. You stayed out there. You were able to hold on and get that win. What were the last few moments of that race like?
Wow. Just pressure intense. You know, knowing that we had a chance to win the Coke 600 late, and of course, we were able to pull it off. But in the moment, you don't know that. But knowing we had a chance to win a race that means so much to me and means so much to our sport. It's one of the crown jewels, the Coca-Cola 600 on Memorial Day weekend. Huge weekend for motor racing, and probably more so with everything that's going on and NASCAR being the only major sport kind of up and going. So it's a race that had eluded me. I'd probably been in position to win it four or five times over the last 10 years and hadn't done it. It was nice to be able to check it off. But in that moment, you're just thinking, oh, boy. The heat is on, and this is our chance. Let's go execute.
You know, Brad, you and I spoke about that very race a year ago, and I knew then how much it meant to you, so I can imagine how much it means to you right now. And again, that was your first Coca-Cola 600 win and the first win for Ford in that event since 2002. So obviously that's a really, really important win. So you win two of the last three. You have four top tens since racing has returned. How do you explain the success that you and the team are having in some really unusual circumstances?
Well, our preparation is really strong, Jim. But then I would say even before the pandemic hit and everything in our world kind of got turned upside down, we were running really well. You know, we had just ran Phoenix the week before the pandemic and led a bunch of laps. And that race kind of went the opposite of how the last two races have gone for us. The Phoenix race actually slipped right through our hands while we were leading. Just kind of missed it a little bit on my own pit strategy and tactics, and I kind of gave that race away to my teammate, Joey Logano. So I think, you know, you win some and you lose some that way. But there's some key learnings that we applied and made them count here the last few weeks.
Hey, Brad, I understand that preparation is key, but you're also doing this with a new crew chief this season in Jeremy Bowens. It would seem like going through a suspension of the season and then restarting might be a challenge with a new driver-crew chief relationship. How have you guys managed that part of it so well?
Yeah, well, that has been tough. You know, actually, in some ways, the pandemic was good for us as a team. It gave us this chance to apply some of the key learnings from the first five races into the future, where, you know, if you just kept racing over and over again, sometimes you don't get a chance to pause and reflect. So that ability to pause and reflect, I think, was very helpful for us.
Plus, Brad, we're talking about the entire team. Like, if you had to, how would you describe the resilience and the mental toughness, not just for you, but for the entire team?
It's at a very high level. Our team's coming together, and I think there's some really strong players when we switch teams. And I had a great team before, don't get me wrong, but this team here has got some really strong players that have a lot of mental toughness, and they're very hungry. You know, they haven't had that, you know, a multiple race win season before, and they knew that we could do that. And here we are very early in the season, and we already have multiple wins. And I think that just fuels the fire even more because, you know, you check the multiple win box, and what comes next? Well, you check the championship box. And in order to do that, you have to be laser-focused in the sport, and I can really see that out of our team.
We're talking to Brad Keselowski. You know, when you talk about that same focus, like basketball players talk about when they're deeply focused like that, they get into a zone where the basketball hoop seems larger than normal and they can't miss. Baseball players will talk about something similar when they know exactly what pitch is coming. Like, as a driver, when you're running the way you are right now, is there an equivalent feeling of being in the zone, and does it carry over from one race to the next?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's an equivalent feeling up. Mostly it's a trust thing because there are always moments where, you know, of adversity in our races where things aren't looking right. And I think you get caught up in that adversity. You allow yourself to get nervous. You don't find the opportunity in it and you fail. I'm a big believer. There's this book by Ryan Holiday, The Obstacles Away. I'm a big believer in just that concept that, hey, you look for obstacles and try to find the opportunities in them. But if you don't have the trust and confidence in each other, you're not in a headspace to do that. So I think that where we're at as a team, kind of hitting our own zone, so to speak, is just that. It's, hey, there might be a moment that doesn't go our way, but we have trust and confidence as we're in our own zone that we'll find the opportunity and overcome it.
That's an amazing book you just referenced, and Ryan Holiday is my guy. I love him. I'm so glad you brought that up, Brad. So that book itself is one of the best books I've ever read. What was your biggest takeaway from The Obstacle is the Way?
That whole concept of not allowing yourself to depreciate into a place mentally where you see an obstacle and you're defeated immediately. In fact, take advantage of the obstacle. Find its own weaknesses, and there usually are weaknesses in every challenge that we face that become opportunities, whether it's in your competition, which is, of course, in my case, as a race car driver, or in your daily life experiences. So it is a tremendous book. And he's a heck of a writer, so I'm glad to hear you read him as well.
I love it. I love that book, and I love the guy. You got to lean into the obstacle. And Brad, there's been a lot of talk before I let you go. A lot of talk about your future and what that might look like after the season. You yourself have spoken to the fact that it's not something you really think about at all. How then do you go about shutting out all that noise and focusing on the task at hand?
Well, I was joking with someone the other day. The good thing for me is I'm not that smart, so I can only think about one thing at a time.
Come on, man.
As you can tell, based off the last week or so here, Jim, I've been focused on winning. So, you know, when you focus on that, generally the other things take care of themselves.
So what's it like racing five times in a matter of 2 weeks, Brad? Is it fun or is it mentally and physically just draining?
It's definitely, you know, more of a challenge, Jim, to run on a Sunday and then again on a Wednesday. You know, I think if you back the sport up, you know, 50 years ago, that was commonplace. They would race multiple times a week. But one of the things most people don't think about is, you know, 50 years ago when they would race multiple times a week, the drivers wouldn't even run the whole race. They'd bring in a substitute halfway through, and they might come in and finish the race, or they might not. In fact, Richard Petty, the king of our sport, had got out of his car a good bit of his races, and a lot of his wins, he wasn't even the driver who pulled his car into victory lane. He just got credit for it because he was the first driver to drive. And so the sport's kind of going back to that. Of course, it puts more of an emphasis on physical training and well-being across the whole fitness platforms. And so thankfully we've had time to prepare for it. We knew this was coming. I think you look at other sports, you know, NFL stands out because they take hits kind of similar to what we do in motorsports, and they have the same issues, right? They play on a Sunday, and those Thursday games aren't much fun because you're not all the way healed up and recovered. And we have the same issues with respect to both hydration and injury. So, You know, at some point you just recognize that it's the same for everyone and try to be the toughest guy you can be.
Brad Keselowski is my guest. All right, then finally Sunday you're going to run in Atlanta with the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. You've dominated this track the last few years with a pair of wins and a runner-up. What is it about Atlanta that suits your style so well?
Oh, it's a tough track, Jim. Really tough track. Really, really fast. Has a lot of grip. And then the tires wear off late in the race and has no grip at all. So you go from having to drive the car kind of all out, really aggressive, and then at the end you have to have a ton of finesse and be really smart about where you position yourself because the car gets so challenging to drive. I think that's something that requires a really thought-out approach, and we've done a great job at that as a team over the last few years, and I hope we can do it again this year.
He is the driver of the number 2 Auto Trader Ford Mustang for Team Penske. He won this series in 2012 and is running really well right now. Once again, the NASCAR Cup Series does return to action Sunday at Atlanta Motor Speedway with the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Brad, another great conversation. Always good to have you on this show. I appreciate you very much, Brad. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jim, and thanks to all the listeners. Hope you're doing well.
Well done, Brad, as always. Like a boss. He's a pro. He is, in fact, virtually every one of them are. Am I right, Alvin?
Good guy. Top performer. They know what they're doing.
Respects the fans.
There's no better league to deal with than NASCAR.
Gives back. Appreciates the sport. Has time for the fans.
And NASCAR has won me over.
I like it. I get it.
They call on time. They do good interviews. They have good attitudes. It's big. It's not going away. Good interview, shows up on time.
Every one of those guys is like that.
They won me over. I will say for the record once again, I've done a 180.
He's not Tony Stewart. Rusty Wallace is my favorite guest. And if it's not Rusty Wallace, it's Clint Bowyer and his bus driver, Curtis.
I did not break the pace car.
Carl Edwards, class act, Trevor Bayne. The best energy.
And I love Jeff Gordon.
I can't pick favorites, but Jimmy Johnson's my favorite. And Brad Keselowski is right there. He is, in fact, virtually every one of them are. Am I right, Alvin?
Good guy, top performer. They know what they're doing.
There you go. NASCAR, my thanks. Brad Keselowski coming in. When we come back, another good friend of the program, Jim Trotter, NFL Network reporter, joins us. That's coming up next segment. Do not go anywhere.